Casting live from the Roswell Infinity Studio, located inside Digital Ignition, where North Atlanta startups take off. It's time for North Fulton Business Radio.
And hello again, everyone. Welcome to another edition of North Fulton Business Radio. We are broadcasting live from our studio inside Digital Ignition, and we've got two great guests, Carla Brandau with the Workplace Power Institute and John Roman. And John is with Transworld Business Advisors of Atlanta North. But before we get to our guest, yes, we are in Digital Ignition, and Digital Ignition is the ultimate place for entrepreneurs to work, innovate, learn, establish, and grow their companies. Nestled within a 45,000-square-foot building is an open floor plan with co-working office space, dedicated desk, private offices, meeting rooms, event space, a classroom, and a fantastic break room with outdoor patio and all the fresh ground coffee you can drink. What more do you need? If you want great co-working as well as space which impresses investors, customers, and future employees, visit digitalignition.com. Now we turn to Carla Brandau, and Carla is with Workplace Power Institute. Hi, Carla.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here.
Glad to have you. So tell us about you. Tell us about the Workplace Power Institute.
Workplace Power Institute is a management consulting firm, and I am a teacher or an educator, you might say, by trade. I have a Bachelor of Arts in Education, and I decided to take my passion for teaching into the training industry. So I started my own business, and I love to watch people have aha moments when we're talking. I love to see them discuss the concepts that I'm bringing to them, and I love to see change in their lives.
Oh, wow. I feel an aha moment coming on, right?
good.
Yeah. So you've got a book.
Yes.
And let's do a shameless plug for your book. I'll do the shameless plug.
Okay.
How to Earn the Gift of Discretionary Effort, which I've already looked up. It's on Amazon. It's available for folks that are interested. So what's discretionary effort? It begs the question, right?
Yeah, it begs the question. It also begs, how do you say it? Because
sure.
Because people, when I first started working with the concept, it's like discretionary effort. What is that? Discretionary effort. And then I had a hard time saying it. And so I understand that that may be tough for people, but it's an absolutely great concept, because what we're talking about here is that people in your organization will work, you might say, to get a paycheck. Okay, discretionary effort is what they're capable of giving to you. So there's a big difference between just doing enough to get your paycheck and not get fired and actually contributing to what's happening in the company. And that's what we say is discretionary effort, is getting them to give you what they're capable of bringing. And most employees are capable of giving you much, much more than they may be right now.
So it's what we think we're getting when we hire folks, but not necessarily what we get after they get on the job for a while, right?
Oh, that's so true. And why we call it the gift is because there's a lot of management. And management, by the way, is a really tough job. By the
sure.
time you get into the different employees and their different personalities and what's happening to them. And it's very, very difficult. And I have found that a lot of people don't understand the concept of discretionary effort. They talk about it, but they don't really understand it. For instance, I heard a manager say, to another manager, you could get her to give you discretionary effort. Just tell her that if she stays late tonight and finishes that report for you, she can have Friday afternoon off. And I go, that's not really discretionary effort. You know, because it's a quid pro quo situation.
Sure, absolutely.
I'm getting what I want, the report.
Right.
She's getting what she really wants, the afternoon off.
So how does this differ from is it different from an engagement program, employee engagement? We hear that term all the time.
There is an element of employee engagement in discretionary effort, absolutely. But it's not a program. A program, and I think we've all been there, you know, you do X amount of work, you'd bring this amount into the company or whatever they have set the parameters for. And at that point, then most of the time you got a catalog, right?
Right.
And you got to pick a ping pong table, or you got to pick a set of pearls, or sometimes even a coffee pot, who knows. But so that's a program that people try to implement. In fact, I knew one company that had a whole department, a whole team that just focused on engagement. Now, they were a fast food business, and their engagement wasn't for the fast food restaurants. It was just to engage the workers in the corporate atmosphere. It's like, huh, I'm not sure that that's exactly what you need, a whole department that's going to just engage employees.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, and what the example you mentioned is more bargaining. I mean, it's really bargaining instead of employees that are motivated to give effort above the minimal baseline.
That's exactly right. And sometimes they will call it going the extra mile. And that's an element too, but going the extra mile is usually thought of as going the extra mile is usually physical. Like, okay, I'm going to stay late tonight. I know that we need this done. It's like, okay, I will come in early tomorrow morning, or I will stay late on, you know, I'll come in on Saturday, whatever you need to do to go the second mile. But people who give you discretionary effort are giving you mind share.
Right.
You know, they're not just complying with what you want. They're going ahead and they're committing. They're committing to the values, the goals, the mission of the organization. And they work with what I like to call the producer's mindset. Now,
say more on that. Yeah.
Yeah, producer's mindset. Well, I've done a lot of time management work in my career. And when the phrase producer's mindset came to me, I knew what it meant. In fact, by the way, I was a little girl in the seventh grade that had the to-do list stamped on my forehead.
Ah, one of those, huh?
Yeah, one of those.
Okay.
And so the producer's mindset means to me that when an employee comes into work, they know what they're going to do for the day, which means they've closed out their day or they've set their goals for this day. And they're not just going to be busy, because we can be busy all day long.
Sure.
They're going to be trying to help you advance the goals of your organization. That's what I mean by the producer's mindset. And they're going to help you be creative. They're going to look at problems that are coming up. And instead of just saying, well, that's not my job, you know, that's not my problem, they'll help you innovate and help you find creative ways to do things. That's what it means to me. Now, when you engage your employees, I have a good example for you, because who knows what they're capable of bringing to you if you give them the assignment, give them the responsibility, make them accountable, give them space to make some errors, and give them deadlines, you know, and make them accountable to that. Who knows what they're capable of? And a good example is when I was doing work for Fort Benning. And the head of the Army Research Institute had lunch with me. His name was Seward Smith. And he said, Carla, you should see what happens to these young people when I bring them in, sit them down, describe a project to them, and I say, are you interested in this? And they say yes. Then he says, if it flies, I'll give you the credit. If it flops, I'll take the rap.
Oh, boy.
Can you see what happens?
Sure.
How much discretionary effort are they going to give? And so in my mind, those are some of the parameters that need to happen when you want to move people from just doing enough where they don't get fired to what they're capable of contributing to your organization.
We're speaking with Carla Brandau, and Carla is the CEO of Workplace Power Institute. So I'm curious about, you mentioned one example, a model of fostering discretionary effort with your gentleman at Fort Benning, but talk in more general terms about how a manager can foster this environment among their team, among their employees.
It kind of goes to the model that we have, that we teach when we come in and do programs in the companies. And the model starts with integrity. And, you know, we researched when we wrote this book, we researched a lot of companies. And I was amazed that about 95% of the companies at the base of their values had integrity. So you have to have a firm integrity base with them. And another thing, as you kind of move up our model, is that they have to feel safe, okay? So this is kind of a physical thing, but they have to feel safe when they come to your building. They want to go home in the same condition that they arrived in the morning. And so that's why you have safety issues and security and all of that. But then you move into psychological safety, and this is a big issue because if the people feel, if the people feel psychologically safe to surface the truth, you know, to be able to tell you what they really think, to be involved in the discussions, then they start to feel this in group. Because when people feel like they're in group, then they're going to naturally give you more of their thought processes and more of their ideas. And one of the next step you might say is that they need to feel socially accepted in your group. As I said, make them feel like they're part of the in group. And what I tell managers is that when you have this new hire, everybody has strengths and limitations, do they not?
Sure.
We hire on the strengths, right?
Right.
That's what we're looking for on their resume, all
those
strengths. But then the limitations, you don't really see them. So what I say, but I mean, they come out. We all have them. And so what I tell people is that you want to accept them as is. Now, have you ever needed a new appliance and you go to the scratch and dent section of the store?
Yes.
Have you ever done that?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And you need a new washer and you go, well, there's a dent on that side, but you know, it's going to be against the wall. So you buy that washer and you get good value for your money. And it's the same way with your employees. If you accept them as is and then help them grow, help them flourish with the strengths that they have or those gifts that they have. If you can help that, then you're going to get great value for the money that you put into their salary.
We're speaking with Carla Brandau, and Carla is the CEO of the Workplace Power Institute. Now, you write and speak about charismatic leadership. Talk a little bit about that. I mean, I can hear folks just rolling their eyes saying, I'm not charismatic, so how am I going to do that? Maybe you can start by defining what charismatic leadership is for you.
Oh, that is an absolutely fabulous topic. And I was doing a personality class in a company. And at the end of the class, everyone kind of wandered out. And this one young lady looked at me and she says, Carla, how do you get charisma? And it's like, whoa. And so I've thought about that for many years. And charisma is, in the first term, is a lot of social ability. Okay, so someone who has a lot of charisma, when you meet them, they will probably have a firm handshake. They will look you right in the eye. They will smile at you. They will make you feel like you're the most important person in the world. That's part of charisma. So a charismatic leader, though, is someone that people like, and they will choose to follow them, not have to follow them, because they are the boss or because they are the manager. So charisma comes in a lot of forms. And by the way, if you want to increase some of the social skills that you have, it's easy to learn because you can practice looking people in the eye and smiling. And you can practice that. And once you've learned that, you can take it everywhere with you. Another little component of that charisma that really fits into leadership is you have to care about the people. You have to really care about them. In fact, if there's one thing that you could do, just one thing, and I've written an article on LinkedIn about this, if there's just one thing that you can do to engage your employees, it's, of course, the long answer is in the book. But the short answer is that you need to love them. And it's not the passionate, romantic love. No, this is the love where I care about who you are. I am grateful for what you bring to this organization. I'm concerned about things that might be a problem in your life. I'm concerned about your well-being. And when they feel that, then they're going to be more loyal to you.
And something tells me you're about to tell us.
Yeah.
I'm racing ahead that actions speak louder than words in that regard, right?
Oh, yes, they do. And a charismatic leader has, well, we mentioned the social skills, right?
Sure.
But a charismatic leader, some people have the social skills naturally. If you've studied the personalities, you know that. Other personalities are just firm in their resolve, and they're just determined to do. And they are charismatic leaders just because of the force of their personality. And then another type of the charisma people have is that they have all the facts. I mean, people follow them because they know what they're doing. And then another type of person, I call them the oak trees because they're just firm and steady. And people can trust them and trust their integrity. So those are all little issues about charisma. But another thing about charisma is that you have to be optimistic. You have to believe in where you're going and what you're going to do. And one of the phrases that we use in our training is, I have everything I need. Okay, now just stop and think about that a minute. Do you have everything you need all the time?
Not really.
Right. So right. It doesn't mean that I have everything I need for the future or everything I'm ever going to want.
Sure.
But it means that when I have a critical situation, I've built this relationship with my employees, I can look at them and see what the gifts they have. And I can say, I have everything I need right now. We have everything we need as a team.
Right.
Let's decide how we can go forward and solve this. Mm-hmm. And that's when you start to get tons of discretionary effort from your people, because they have gifts of life experience. They have gifts of other organizations they've been in. They have gifts of being in associations, going to conventions. They have all this knowledge. And if you can help them apply it to this situation, then you can really say we have everything we need to succeed.
Good stuff. Carla Brandau. Carla is the CEO of the Workplace Power Institute. Carla, we could talk for a while, but we better wrap it up and let people know how to get in touch with you if they'd like to know more.
They can go to carlabrandau.com, or they can go to earnthegift.com. And by the way, on earnthegift.com/app, there's a little app there where they can put in how many employees they have, what percentage of disengagement they think they're in, and they can calculate how much money they're losing per month based on disengagement. And if we can turn some of those around with our discretionary effort leadership, they'll be having more on their bottom line and more profit margins.
Wow. Sounds great. So, Carla, also want to mention your book, How to Earn the Gift of Discretionary Effort, by Carla Brandau and Douglas Ross. Carla, this is a nice gift. Thanks for the homework you gave me.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Again, Carla Brandau with the Workplace Power Institute. Thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.